Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. The Scott Horton Show on the Liberty Radio Network. War and Religion. The Bible Made Me Do It. That's one. That's at uns.com. The other is The Pope Rebukes Turkey and Should Challenge America and Israel by Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer and writer for The American Conservative. That's the last one there. And uns.com again. Welcome back to the show, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Scott. How about you?
I'm doing good. Oh, I forgot to say, executive director of the Council for the National Interest in Washington. Okay. Talk to me about the Pope here. The Pope rebukes Turkey, and that's over the old Ottoman genocide from right around this time 100 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the centenary of the start of the genocide, basically started in 1915 when the Russian Imperial armies invaded eastern Turkey, and the Armenians, it was suspected at the time, or perhaps it was invented at the time, that they were siding with the invaders, who were fellow Christians. So they became a convenient scapegoat and were basically marched en masse away from their homeland across a desert region, central Anatolia, and as many as 1.5 million of them might have died.
Wow. So that's kind of Andrew Jackson with exponents there. Huh?
Yeah, it's you know, certainly there are precedents in our own history of similar forced migrations of Indians, but nobody's worried about that one. They're worried about the one that was carried out by the Turks, because of course the Turks are they're Muslims, and so there's a religious kind of flavor to all of this.
Right. Yeah. Of course. And now, but so I don't know, man. What's the big deal about just recognizing the thing? I mean, why such politics about this? Everybody agrees. I mean, if you're telling me with a straight face that, yeah, something on the order of 1.000.000 died in this thing, that sounds like a genocide or an attempted one, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, in my article, I say that, you know, there's no doubt about it that a lot of the orders to carry this out came from top level Turks, among the young Turks and the Ottoman advisors. And there's no question but that it was genocidal in nature. I don't have a problem with that, except it seems to be something that they're digging out after 100 years to be playing politics with. I don't think that it's there's any clear humanitarian message here. And the objection I raise is the fact that here we have the Pope talking about something that occurred 100 years ago with a government that no longer exists, with people that no longer exist, and yet we have real life things like, for example, George W. Bush, who was met in private audience by Pope John Paul II 4 times without John Paul II ever saying anything to George Bush or refusing to meet him, which would have been even better, to send a signal that George Bush was kind of carrying out his own genocide.
Yeah, and he only had, I mean, he did, I guess, oppose the Iraq war, John Paul, but just barely, right? So, you know, I hope for peace or some kind.
Right. It was that kind of language. So I'm basically saying here was a Pope that genuinely, I think, is a revered individual for a lot of what he did, who basically, when confronted with the issue of confronting an American president for policies that were manifestly evil and were gravely damaging the Christian populations in the Middle East. And here all he does is come out with a mealy-mouthed, you know, comment about, oh, well, we oppose this fighting and so on and so forth. So he could have done a lot more. That was my point. And then I get into the point of, well, what about, you know, Israel? Why are Christian churches so reluctant to support BDS, which is boycott, divestment, and sanctions against particularly the West Bank Israeli colonies Yeah. And then there's been a tepid response on the part of Christianity about this. And I said, gee, what would it be like if the Pope were actually to make a very firm comment about this, that Catholics should support BDS or some aspect of it? And again, it seems to me that there's politics in this, and that where the Pope should be serving as a witness to this and making a moral statement, he's unwilling to do so.
Yeah, well, and this Pope Francis, he's more outspoken on all kinds of things than the last two popes, right? But just not on the American Empire?
Yeah, that's right. He is. But, you know, nevertheless, I guess it gives you the lesson that however much you want to regard a religion as some kind of moral force, basically any organized religion is actually political. And we're seeing the politics of this playing out in terms of what he thinks he can get away with saying and what he thinks he can't get away with saying. Because it's clear to anyone that these are major moral issues in terms of how the United States has devastated the Middle East. I'm sure you saw the story about a week ago, where they're estimating now there are 2 million people are dead as a result of the global war on terror. And nobody talks about that, and the Israeli policy on the West Bank and everything. Almost nobody agrees that there's some kind of moral basis for what they're doing there, or ethical basis. So these are clear-cut issues, and yet we're not getting the kind of definitive comments from our moral leaders in the religious organizations.
Right. Yeah. In fact, Grant Smith is just pointing out a new study. Where Americans, I think 60-something percent, say that they don't agree with the current policy of the occupation in the West Bank, that kind of thing. And now, so, you know, it's confusing to me, especially with this current pope. I mean, John Paul was already so old. I mean, who knows what with him? I don't know. But with this current guy, it seems like if he would actually just make a case, right, not just, you know, make a statement, a small statement, but actually explain why this or that, you know, on a controversial issue like the war on terrorism or, you know, indefinite detention or the occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, these kinds of things, that if he would explain, hey, look, this is why I think this and this is why it ought to be our official position, that could really make a big difference in the way people think about this. I mean, I don't know how it is in Europe, but in America, the Protestant churches are so divided. There's like, you know, however many 25 different, you know, major branches of Protestantism. But on the Catholic side, that's a lot of people to kind of get with it at once. You know, it seems like if the Pope is promoting something like justice in a previously taboo area of discussion, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way I see it. I mean, there are 80 million people who are nominally at least Catholic in the United States. And that's quite a big group. And the fact is, if, you know, the Pope were to take the lead, you know, you don't have to package this as an Israel bash or even as a United States bash. There are ways to finesse the issue, but to talk about it. And it just seems to me that this opportunity is sedulously avoided. It's easier to talk about Armenian genocide because it's 100 years old. And besides, Turks are Muslims, so it's the kind of message that comes across to me that I think is totally inappropriate, and it's why probably personally I felt I haven't been very religious for a long time, but I personally felt a complete dissociation with the Catholic Church when Pope John Paul II met with George W. Bush. I said this is just a betrayal of every value that I was brought up with as a Catholic, and I still feel that way.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate that, you know, again, just the opportunity wasted. It's like Rand Paul, right? All that could be done, but then, nah, it's the same frustration I feel when I listen to the radio, you know, tune in NPR or something, and it's just some nonsense, right? Like the most hard-hitting thing they'll talk about is promoting the next housing bubble or something. Whatever. It's just, what a waste of bandwidth of, you know what I mean? Of radio spectrum.
It's like my wife has the tendency to watch a channel, CBS News, in the morning, and they have what's his name, Rose. What's his first name?
Or Charlie Rose, the PBS guy?
Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose is the moderator or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he looks at you with his steely gaze and he says, "We are now about to have some real news." And they use that phrase every day. So obviously some kind of consultant told them that this is a phrase you have to use to impress upon the people that they're getting real news. And, of course, it's all bullshit.
Yeah, it's about just pictures of puppies. It's nonsense.
Yeah, it's about what the Kardashians are doing, about some guy who survived after having his leg eaten by a shark. You know, that's real news.
Yeah. Always with the sharks.
Yeah. Sharks are... are the victims of our media.
Yeah, you know,
if
the whole summer...
If anything, he's in the news.
Yeah, the whole summer of 2001, before the 9/11 attack, that was all I talked about was Gary Condit and then the shark attacks, because there were a dozen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sharks. Yeah. All right, well, anyway, so... and now to the Protestant side of this. Actually, you know what? We're supposed to be on break, so hang tight with us. We'll be right back. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, guys. Well, I don't know if you were hearing all that, but... had some technical difficulties here, but it's all right. I got Phil Giraldi on the line. He's a former CIA officer. Now he runs the Council for the National Interest, and he writes for UNS.com and TheAmericanConservative.com. We're talking about how the Pope ought to denounce the empire. It's not like he would need to even hedge that much. It's pretty much all wrong and based on all lies and... I don't know about we can all just get along, but we could certainly get along a hell of a lot better than we are with the way things are going. I think anyone could agree. And then so you have this other piece that's sort of along these same lines, but in a different way. War and Religion, Don't Tell Me the Bible Made Me Do It, here at UNS.com. And well, you start off here talking about Michelle Bachmann. And I got to admit, I'm a bit confused about the end times here, that she's saying that Barack Obama's refusal to kowtow to Israel is going to cause Jesus to come back, when I thought that we always had to kowtow to Israel in order to make Jesus come back was the whole scam here. So which is it, Phil?
I don't know. I mean, she's a little bit confusing, actually. I mean, I also point out that she's apparently studied Islamic holy texts and has determined that the Muslims have ever since the beginning been wanting to invent or get a nuclear weapon. That means since these texts date from the 7th century, that means that they've been doing it for, 1,400 years.
Hmm. Maybe she studied under Daniel Pipes or Frank Daphne or something.
I suspect so. Yeah, yeah. You're right. She's a bit confused. She also said in the interview that she was just really looking forward to the fact that all this dissing of Israel and this love fest by Obama with Islamic terrorists is going to bring back the second coming of Christ much sooner, and that's something that she's really happy about. She's yet another American politician who wants the world to end.
Yeah. Well, at least she's optimistic either way, right? That if we're doing everything George Bush's way, that's helping to bring about the apocalypse. And if we do it Obama's way, then that's helping to bring about the apocalypse too, which is something that we can all look forward to.
That's probably due to her experience as a politician. She's willing to look at both sides of the issue. And fortunately, they both come out her way.
Oh, man. All right, so now... But listen, Michelle Bachmann, she's an easy target to use as a punching bag here. But does anyone agree with her, Phil, about any of this nonsense?
Yeah, that's what the rest of my article goes on to describe, how apparently there are quite a lot of Michelle Bachmanns out there. Because if you look at various developments, the Republican Party, which, of course, pretty much moves in lockstep with both Israel and the Christian Zionists, is essentially dedicated clearly to go to war with Iran. So, I mean, this is the kind of consequence which probably a lot of Republican congressmen would not want to admit, or they don't really want that. They just want something, you know, to chew on. But the fact is that this is where it's going to lead. And then there was an opinion poll, a Bloomberg opinion poll, which essentially said that roughly half of the U.S. population, very heavily weighted in terms of Republicans, and especially those who describe themselves as evangelical or born again, these people by large margins basically want the United States to defer to Israeli interests in terms of what the United States does in the Middle East. In other words, turn over our foreign policy to them is okay with them.
That was a perfect bleep there with your phone there. It started with the F, and it could have been either one there, foreign or something else. Now, listen, it's not hyperbole, everybody. Wait, stop. I know that you're thinking, come on, Phil Giraldi, did they really say that? But that's really what they said was, quote, even if Israel's interests diverge from the United States, the Republicans said America should do what the Israelis want, not what's good for America.
That's what they said. And you know, admittedly, I pointed out that if you read the whole question, the whole question starts with Israel is our closest ally and friend and the only democracy in the Middle East. And then it goes into the question. So it's a loaded question the way it's set up. And I suspect that the question had been something different, like, should the United States go to war against Iran because Israel wants us to? The response, I think, could have been quite different.
Right.
The problem is that the U.S. public has been fed this steady diet of propaganda and nonsense for years and years and years now, and it really doesn't know what's going on and probably doesn't really care. But the fact is that, you know, this kind of stuff is real dangerous, just like when you and I have talked in the past about the policy in the Ukraine and with Russia. This stuff is dangerous. I mean, this is our nation's security. I hate to use that word, but our security in a very real sense, and the well-being of our people, and not sending our kids off to get killed in wars that make no sense, like we've been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. Now, and especially when you're talking about Russia, if they have one job in the world, it's keeping the peace with Russia. Even if we got to sacrifice Lithuania. Sorry, but you know what I mean? If the next president after Putin decides to call himself something more dictatorial than president and decides he's going to retake the Baltics, according to the current treaty situation, we would be obliged to get into a nuclear war with them, even if it meant the death of every last Lithuanian, in order to make sure that they guaranteed their independence from Russia was guaranteed. And so, I mean, I have to be that, to phrase it that ruthless, because that's the actual stakes, the way that the empire has set it up.
Yeah, that's right. And we have a lot of that to blame on Bill Clinton, who basically was the one that gave the green light to expanding into Eastern Europe, even after Gorbachev was promised that we wouldn't do that. And this has created this horrible situation where we're basically obligated to defend former parts of the Warsaw Pact against Russia. And Russia is the only country in the world that can destroy us. I mean, this is, if you wanted to write a fiction novel and use this as a theme, nobody would believe it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I'm sure you read John Mearsheimer's piece about this in Foreign Affairs, and I interviewed him about it. And he said that, no, really, I know it might sound unbelievable. It's really all about interests and real things going on behind the scenes. But from his point of view, it was an academic exercise. Some academics believed that it's basically like just spreading the EU, you spread NATO too, and that keeps America's influence there, and it'll be fine, and the Russians won't mind. And it was basically, you know, it all came down to some stupid paper some guy wrote or something that everybody decided they agreed with. And then it turned out that it was actually a bad idea. And that, you know, it was basically as simple as that. Like, these guys basically thought all they were doing was, you know, making sure that their golf club could stay on the dole for the longer term, or whatever, and that there would be no consequences. That was really the argument of Strobe Talbot, and then the Russians will never misconstrue this as some kind of threat to them. How could they ever, when we don't mean it that way at all? And so it makes me wonder whether that's actually true. Maybe that's actually true, that rather than, you know, this much more, you know, hardline neocon wish to someday dismantle Russia or do a color-coded revolution there, something like that, that the men who actually expanded NATO really were just a bunch of, you know, guys with elbow patches and pipes and bright ideas, you know, without even, not even considering what Lockheed wants necessarily or anything like that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I suspect there could be a lot of truth to that, and certainly Mearsheimer is well enough placed to kind of be, you know, inside the system when that was happening. I wouldn't doubt that. But at the same time, let's not, you know, diminish the role of people like Wolfowitz and Victoria Nuland in terms of operating from inside the government to make this kind of stuff happen. This just didn't happen in a vacuum.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, and certainly when you're talking about the latest crisis, but I don't know how much influence has she had going back on this. A lot.
Well, she's actually, well, she goes all the way back to Cheney. She was his foreign policy advisor.
Hmm.
So we're talking, you know, 2000.
Oh yeah, no. So yes, somebody, you or somebody ought to really look into that and see what was her role in Bush's Eastern European policy and NATO expansion, specifically like in 2008 when they held that meeting where they talked about bringing Ukraine into NATO and Georgia
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah, and Georgia. I would suspect if we could get at the documents, which are probably classified, we would learn that a lot of these names are popping up here, there, and everywhere in terms of the discussions, in terms of the direction they should move in. I bet you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I'm sorry I kept you over time here, but one more thing, I guess, would be back to the question of the religiosity in all this here. It's sort of the state religion is all mixed up in it, too. And it seems like the bottom line here, Phil, is that the truth doesn't matter at all, that Americans can just be made to believe that, yeah, well, you know, war with Russia is inevitable, or, yeah, well, you know, the only solution to the Middle East is just to turn the whole place to glass, or whatever kind of, you know, bromides that people get subjected to time after time and year after year, that, you know, none of it has to have anything to do with reality. Even Rand Paul says the enemy is radical Islam when we're right in the middle of a regional civil war within, you know, a sectarian war within the Riyadh side and the Tehran side. But meanwhile, the enemy is all of them, even according to him. That's all anybody yeah. knows. And then if throw a little Jesus, come back, kind of magic on top and whatever. That's enough to support any sort of policy that the Newlands and the rest of these idiots can make up for us, it seems like.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I see, to me, the scariest thing is the fact that you have this solid, wealthy, numerous, religious-oriented group that actually believes that the world should end, and sooner rather than later. And it's about time for the rest of us to stand up to this. I mean, we've had numerous Republican politicians who've taken the same position, although they don't quite verbalize it that way, but that's what they believe. And you've got this huge mass of Christians United for Israel and other evangelical groups that basically are on board of the same thing. This is what scares me. It's maybe time for the rest of us who don't want unnecessarily our world to end next week to stand up to them and expose them and talk about them.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is, too, is it sounds so crazy. It sounds like maybe you're the crazy one or something. But no, really, they're there. And there's always indications here and there, Phil, and they don't ever get enough attention, but that our Air Force at the highest levels is
yeah.
run by these nuts, and including the Strategic
yeah.
Air Command, the guys with the bombers, the long-range nuclear bombers.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, I understand nobody wants
yeah.
to die alone, but damn, we got to all die?
Yeah, I'm aware of that, the information about that, and as I'm sure you are. It's just, it's amazing. It's scary. It's beyond scary.
Yep. All right, that's Phil Giralli, everybody. He's at the Council for the National Interest, UNS.com, and the American Conservative magazine at theamericanconservative.com. Thanks again, Phil.
Okay, Scott.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support The Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.